New York City's 1861 secession plot. A divisive presidential election threatened to destroy the Union. It was 1860, and Abraham Lincoln, on record as being morally opposed to the enslavement of human beings, had swept nearly every county in the Northeast and Upper Midwest, and lost every single one south of the Mason-Dixon line. He'd also lost every county in and around New York City, fracturing the nation's largest state. The city's mayor, Fernando Wood, decided to act. Wood could see the Union was coming to an end. Expecting the breakup to be peaceful, he wanted his metropolis to seek its independence as well, ending an unhappy, two-century-long marriage between the Dutch-founded city and the New England-settled upstate New York. Rival cultures that had never seen eye to eye, while other portions of our state have unfortunately been imbued with the fanatical spirit which actuates a portion of the people of New England. The city of New York has unfalteringly preserved the integrity of its principles in adherence to the compromises of the Constitution, he would later say. The real danger to the city, he added, wasn't the Confederacy but hostile upstate lawmakers in Albany. Before November 1860 was out, Wood was holding private secession planning meetings at his sprawling country estate on what's now the Upper West Side, with invitations going out to real estate tycoon William Astor, financier August Belmont, and Democratic Party honcho Samuel Tilden. Financier George Law, one of Wood's most powerful allies, was dispatched to Washington to rally the city's congressional delegation to support the plan, while worried officials in Albany tasked Metropolitan Police Superintendent John Kennedy with gathering intelligence on the mayor's plans. Reporters at newspapers opposed to the mayor began receiving leaks that Wood might lead the city out of the Union. By the 10th of December, it was all out in the open. On that day, pro-secession Congressman Daniel Sickles delivered a fiery speech on the U.S. House floor. Secession, although it may begin at the South, will not end at the South. He told his colleagues, there is no sympathy now between the city and the state of New York, nor has there been for years. When this Union is no more, we will not consent to remain the submissive appendage of a Puritan province. Sickles added, I tell you, our Imperial City will repel the hateful cabal at Albany, which has so long abused its power over her, and, as a free city, open wide her gates to the civilization and commerce of the world. James Buchanan, the lame duck president, was alarmed, writing a friend that no adequate cause exists for the extent and violence of the existing panic in New York. Through that momentous winter, as the Deep South seceded, the Confederate States of America was created and Lincoln was inaugurated. It seemed Wood's secession plan might work. Many in the metropolis hoped it would. Merchants feared staying with the Union would mean losing the city's lucrative southern trade. But the most urgent concern was that greater New York City, a polyglot, multi-ethnic, commercially minded, raucously tolerant society founded by the Dutch, would be trapped in a state and rump federation dominated by Yankees of Puritan New England origin, with their moralistic missions, assimilative predilections, and growing hostility to drinking, Catholicism, and slavery. Had the South Carolinians not fired on Fort Sumter in April 1861, New York City might well have become its own country, a Singapore-like city-state on the Hudson. New York has always been a state divided between two colonial-era cultures, whose peoples have looked askance at one another since the 17th century. The towns and cities on Manhattan, western Long Island, the Hudson shore of New Jersey, and in the lowermost Hudson Valley, were the legacy of the New Netherland colony, with Dutch names scattered from Harlem and Brooklyn to Hoboken, Lake Boss, and Staten Island. For decades after its 1624 foundation, the colony was ruled by a global corporation, the Dutch West India Company, and served as an entrepot between Virginia, New England, and the Iroquois Confederacy. From the start it was diverse, populated by French-speaking Walloons, Scandinavian Lutherans, Irish and Portuguese Catholics, Sephardic Jews, Anglican and Quaker English, free and enslaved Africans, and at least one Muslim farmer from Morocco. The Dutch were rarely in the majority, even as their signature architecture, stepped gable roofs crowned with red tile, defined New Amsterdam, the settlement at the tip of Manhattan Island. Their government promoted trade and eschewed democracy while tolerating cultural differences, religious dissenters, freedom of inquiry, and human bondage. At a time when social status was largely a matter of birth, New Netherland's local elite were self-made men. The first Vanderbilt, Janetz and Vanderbilt, was an indentured servant. The founder of the Van Cortlandt dynasty was a soldier, and the Van Burens started as tenant farmers. After an English victory over the Dutch in 1664, New Netherland became New York, but Greater New York City, including northern New Jersey, western Long Island, and the lower Hudson counties, remained culturally Dutch, and the language was dominant there for another century. By 1861, the city had become what old Amsterdam had been two centuries earlier, a cosmopolitan center of banking, publishing, and trade, and a haven for people persecuted in neighboring polities. Upstate New York, by contrast, had been settled by New Englanders. Hundreds had moved south to infiltrate the contested intercolonial border before 1664, and afterward they came in numbers that alarmed the Dutch, who had long dismissed their northern neighbors as Yankars, essentially the Dutch version of cheesehead, which sounded like Yankees to the English. These upstate Yankee colonists were the descendants of the early Puritans, who believed they had been chosen by God to create a more perfect society in the New England wilderness. Unlike the Dutch, 17th century New Englanders were decidedly monocultural, obsessively moralistic, and notoriously intolerant, hanging Quakers, attacking Indians, and driving out dissenters. By the early 19th century, their descendants had become convinced their mission was to consummate the ideals in the Declaration of Independence. By the antebellum period, the New England-founded settlements across the northern seven-eighths of New York State weren't just part of Greater New England, they'd become the primary stronghold of its messianic social projects. This was the burned-over district, center of the utopian religious awakening that produced Mormonism, Seventh-day Adventism, and the Free Love Oneida community. The women's suffrage movement started in Seneca Falls, and some paths of the Underground Railroad ended on the shores of Lake Erie. The leaders of these rival cultural zones, the anything-goes Dutch space and the moralistic, orderly Yankee one, did not see eye to eye on either slavery or multiculturalism. Tensions only increased as large numbers of Irish, German and other foreign immigrants arrived in the city, and the 1850 Fugitive Slave Act stirred abolitionist sentiment in the rest of the state. New York City and its mayor, tolerant of slavery and diversity alike, aligned with the Southern-dominated Democratic Party, upstate New York, which then had more people, joined Lincoln's new anti-slavery Republican Party while taking measures to bring the unruly metropolis to heel. In 1857, the upstate Yankees used their legislative majorities and governorship to severely restrict when, where and by whom liquor could be sold in the state, while taking over control of the city's metropolitan police, port and major public works projects. In response, Mayor Wood created his own rival police force, which released suspects arrested by the Metropolitans. When the latter arrived to arrest Wood himself for inciting a riot, Wood's men engaged them in a violent battle on the steps of City Hall. Wood and his allies therefore saw the impending collapse of the Union as an opportunity. They knew there was no appetite for open rebellion. New Yorkers' beef was with the state, not the federal government, and put their hopes in a peaceful dissolution. If the Confederacy is broken up, the government is dissolved, and it behoves every distinct community, as well as every individual, to take care of themselves, Wood explained. On the 7th of January, 1861, the mayor made his move, telling city aldermen that New York City would proclaim its independence. Writing in reference to the New England colonized upstate, Wood asked, why may not New York disrupt the bands which bind her to a corrupt and venal master? Instead, he argued, the city would form its own city-state, pointing to examples such as Hamburg, Frankfurt, Bremen and other Hanseatic states in what would later become Germany. Amid the gloom which the present and prospective condition of things must cast over the country, New York, as a free city, may shed the only light and hope for a future reconstruction of the nation, he declared. Southerners loved the mayor's proposal, with Virginian writer George Fitzhugh lauding it as a chance to escape the immoral, infidel, agrarian, free-love democracy of Western New York, and the rule of Puritans, the vilest, most selfish and unprincipled of the human race. At least three members of the city's congressional delegation were for it. Three daily newspapers, the Express, Daybook and Daily News, were enthusiastic, as were many merchants and bankers. Secession by peaceful and legal means, the Daily News editorialized, is worthy of the attention of every New Yorker. But South Carolina's shocking the 12th of April attack on Fort Sumter, a federal military base protecting Charleston's harbor, incensed most everyone living north of the Mason-Dixon line, effectively ending the city's move for independence. Popular opinion in New York City swung behind Lincoln's call for troops to put down the rebels. Wood directed citizens to set aside partisanship and rally to the restoration of the Constitution and the Union. Sickles raised four regiments of soldiers and, as a major general at Gettysburg, lost a leg and earned the Medal of Honor fighting the Confederates. Charlestonians had ended Gotham's bid for nationhood, but the dream of escaping Albany's control continued. For more than a century, downstate legislators repeatedly submitted bills to let the metropolis become its own U.S. state. Their upstate colleagues, who controlled state politics by force of population until the mid-20th century, laughed them off. One of two 1919 plans proposed a new state of Greater New York to include Long Island and seven counties on the lower Hudson, which corresponded almost exactly with the old Dutch influence zone. A 1959 effort was endorsed by the city council, 23-1, and a 1966 statehood plan was floated by State Supreme Court Justice Emeritus Samuel Hofstadter. Author Norman Mailer made an unsuccessful 1969 mayor run on a secession platform, but the high-water mark came in 1971, when Representative Bella Abzug's 51st state plan had the support of four of her House colleagues, seven state senators, 33 assembly members, 22 city councillors and three borough presidents. The effort died after a mayoral commission found the city's balance sheets would be hurt. By the 1970s, the balance of power had shifted. Metropolitan New York's population growth outstripped upstates as deindustrialization hammered Buffalo, Syracuse and Rochester. Upstate pride and resentment were encapsulated in the political writing of native son Bill Kaufman. Kooks and visionaries, Jemima Wilkinson and the Fox sisters and Frederick Douglass, took root in our soil. Shanty Irishmen built the Erie Canal. Jared Smith bought John Brown his guns. He argued in a 1991 essay in the Crooked Lake Review, give us our own state, he added, and we just might give America another Bob Taft or William Jennings Bryan. Since the late 1990s, bills to divide the Empire State have come from upstate leaders at a rate of nearly one a year, only to be killed in committee by Gothamites. One perennial sponsor, State Senator John R. Cool Jr., once said his Finger Lakes area constituents often asked him, why don't you just cut the city of New York off and let it drift out to sea? The answer, of course, is that New Amsterdam no longer sees the need to leave.